Triple R, it's Einstein and Gogo. This is a science program. If you've accidentally tuned in, I'll give you about 2 seconds to change if you don't like science.
No, just say if they like
good.
Science.
We do have another guest in the studio. Dr. Augustin Schifrin is a chief investigator within the Fleet Centre. He's a senior lecturer in the School of Physics and Astronomy at Monash University. Augustin, welcome to Triple R.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you in. Now, you're working on some of these really tailored materials and so forth. And let's start. Are you in the theory sort of element, or are you making them?
No, I'm on the experimental side.
Oh, good.
So yeah. My team spends most of their time in the lab.
Yep.
And, we benefit from collaborations with yours to try to understand what's going on.
Yeah, sometimes you have to work with those guys. I mean, it's tough.
It's part of the game.
But yeah. I find if you put a sandwich under their door and you wait a few hours, some stuff will come back out. Is that how it works?
There's a bit of that, yeah.
But you're working on some of these really new materials, but yours in particular are based on sort of bioorganisms. So can you give us an idea of, like, what sort of bioorganisms have materials that are of interest to you?
So that's a good question. It's a bit of a complex question. So I think we should think, or the way I like to think about it is that the most complex machines that we know mm-hmm. are actually bioorganisms.
Right. Yeah.
We're able to achieve incredible functions, and we're very complex systems. Mm-hmm. And when I say we, I also include plants,
right.
any kind of bioorganisms. Now, one of the key or the common threads of these systems is that everything happens, at least at the fundamental level, at the nanoscale mm-hmm. and at the scale of single molecules.
Mm-hmm.
And what's fascinating is that a lot of these molecules are very similar. For example, if you look at a photosynthesis in a plant, their plants are able to absorb light very efficiently and transform that into usable energy. Now, if you look now at the nanoscale, the systems that are responsible for that, or at least the first steps for that, are little molecules on the order of 1 to a few nanometers. And when I say molecules, so they're composed of carbon, and sometimes they even incorporate single metal atoms.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those molecular entities are quasi-identical to the molecules that, in the case of humans, are able to absorb gas molecules, for example, mm-hmm. oxygen, and exchange them.
Right, yeah.
So, and they're quasi-identical. The only thing that changes is just, instead of having magnesium, they have iron.
Right. Yeah.
So we're trying to get inspired by nature and use little molecules on the order of 1 nanometers, but to engineer and fabricate materials that could fulfill a function.
So answer a question for me that I've had for a long time, and that is, biology just seems to be really good at this, and we seem to be, frankly, really average at this. Like, our ability to reach the efficiencies that you talk about in photosynthesis and so forth, we just don't seem to be able to get there. But when you describe these simple molecular processes in plants and so forth, it seems like, well, why can't we mimic these? What's so hard about it?
That's a great question. Well, we're trying to go in that direction. And nature has the advantage of time, as we heard maybe
right,
from our previous guests. So
millions of years.
There's millions of years, right?
We've been doing it for a few weeks.
We've been doing it for basically a few decades.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So because of that high or of this time scale, systems became very complex.
Mm.
Bioorganisms are very complex. And for example, one example is that we're just recently to understand, or there are at least strong hints, that the reason why photosynthesis is so efficient in nature is that it seems, or, well, there's some controversy, but it seems that nature benefits from quantum mechanical phenomena.
Right.
And this has been discovered only in the last 10 years. So we're still learning every day from this complex system. So I'm a physicist. I don't have a biology background. So I try to fragment these complex systems as much as possible.
Mm.
So we try to identify in these complex systems what are the smallest entities that can fulfill function.
Right. So this is really cool. And when you said photosynthesis and the complexity of the molecule, I was thinking of the advancements in cryo electron microscopy, where they can now visualize like an individual photosystem, one, the protein they think is responsible for photosynthesis. And they say just the amazing complexity. It has like a 10 arrays almost for interacting with light. So in a practical sense, now after this analogy, I'm trying to understand, what do you actually build on the nanoscale? Is it just a flat coating, or what are you engineering? To what material, when you say engineering, what are you making as a material?
So that's a good question. So we have a whole bunch of different avenues. We are trying, for example, in one case, to develop, we can call it coatings, based on organic molecules, that will have the electronic properties. So when I say electronic properties, where the quantum mechanical phenomena will dictate how electrons behave, that could be used for solar cells. That's one avenue. The other avenue, and because of the whole playground that we have with chemistry, is to develop similar coatings, but that could result in electronics devices. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the activities that we have in the Center of Excellence. Because of the vast range of molecules we can play with, we can choose the function we want to use and then play with different parameters.
How scalable are these things? I mean, when you talk about something like plants, of course, I mean, you know, nature's managed to make these things infinitely scalable, and you see the amazing fractal patterns in some of these, all of these features that we see mathematically and we understand. But when we want to construct these things in the lab, I mean, often, you know, many labs around the world do this stuff, but they're atom by atom, top down construction methods. I mean, what are you doing specifically?
That's a great question, and that's one of the main motivations for us using carbon-based molecules or bio-inspired mm-hmm. molecules. One thing is their electronic properties, but the other thing is this molecular recognition and self-assembly capabilities.
Right.
So a great example is DNA.
Mm-hmm.
It has a beautiful nanoscale structure, so this beautiful double-stranded helix, and it all results from self-assembly and intermolecular interactions. I think I heard hydrogen bonding earlier in the show. So that's something we try to benefit from. Molecular recognition, non-covalent, metal ligand interactions, that will be beneficial for scalability.
Mm.
One of the things we try to do is not place one atom at a time. We can do it, but it's extremely time and energy consuming. We would like to benefit from the self-assembly capabilities of organic molecules to synthesize materials from the bottom up. And that is scalable.
It certainly seems as though in the biomedical fields, this is starting to happen. You know, people are using E. coli for so many different processes to actually get things done, as opposed to it in its own sense, but they're using it as a delivery mechanism, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, so there seems to be a lot of possibilities there in terms of utilizing what's already there in nature to do the job for us.
Yeah, exactly. So that's very much related to that example.
So I suppose this is more of a philosophical question, really, but it's more around, you know, you're talking about how these natural structures kind of put themselves together, and you're doing that on the atomic scale, but you want to be able to exploit that. Is that kind of effectively engineering life itself in some ways? Is that something that you guys think about? And it's, I mean, it's a bit deep maybe to go into, but...
It's a bit deep for Sunday morning.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Before midday, sorry. Shouldn't bring it up on a Sunday morning, should I? But no, just in the sense that, you know, you're talking about, you know, the fact that it's so time and labor intensive to and energy intensive as well. You know, if you're wanting to, for example, create artificial photosynthesis, and you have to, you know, generate this atom by or molecule by molecule, or atom by atom, it's that takes a long time, and does it save as much energy as it, you know,
uses?
Yeah. And the answer at the moment is probably no, but, you know, by exploiting these structures, the way that life naturally and biology naturally does it, I don't know, this whole idea of kind of creating life itself.
Yeah, there's definitely, the way I like to see it, there's an idea of closing the loop, right, which is, you know, science, you can see it from the point of view of trying to enhance or... let's say, adapt nature.
Mm-hmm.
This has an angle of more, okay, let's look at what nature has been able to achieve through millions of years of evolution and see if we can inspire ourselves from that and develop technologies from it.
Well, Justin, before we let you go, is there a material that is sort of on the forefront that you guys will put out first, do you think, in the coming years? The centre's relatively new. I mean, is there one that you're going after first?
We have different materials we're working on in parallel. One material that we're trying to achieve in particular is based on the activities of the center and is this topological insulator.
Mm-hmm.
But based on organic,
right.
So carbon-based materials. So I don't know if I have time to describe what a topological insulator is, but it's basically just think of a material that's very good at conducting electrons and even at room temperature. And there are quantitative theoretical predictions that tell us we should be able to do it with carbon-based materials or with little organic molecules similar to those found in nature, and we could benefit from this self-assembly protocols. And so that's definitely very exciting.
Mm. That sounds very cool. Well, thanks for coming in, and it's great to have this stuff working here in Melbourne. And the centre is a collaboration between a number of universities, isn't it? Swinburne, RMIT, Monash, is that?
No, there's... We're a whole bunch of universities. I had to make sure that I remember the, them all. But there's UNSW. They're not only Victorian universities.
Yeah.
There's Swinburne, Monash, and so we're almost 20 investigators within Australia and their teams.
Mm.
But also, what's interesting is that we collaborate with international partners. So it's definitely a
big effort
and a very nice environment to work in.
Look, it's great chatting to you, and we look forward to seeing some of these things come out, because it'd be great if Australia could really lead the way in some of these areas. And it sounds like you guys are having a good crack at it, and the bioengineered stuff is really interesting to me, because I think, you know, there's so much to learn there. So thanks for coming in, Triple R, and we'll chat again.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Dr. Augustin Schifrin is Chief Investigator within Fleet and a Senior Lecturer in Physics and Astronomy in the School of Physics and Astronomy. You're probably not lecturing astronomy at Monash University.
No.
anyone can do it, it's not that hard. We're going to take a break, folks, and we'll be back in a moment. Dr. Daly has something important to get off her chest.